dedicated to HBO's Game of Thrones and George R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire book series. You're listening to Podcast Winterfell.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podcast Winterfell, part of the DVR Podcasting Network. Check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/DVR or at podcastwinterfell.com to listen to our 300-plus shows covering every episode of Game of Thrones, all the books, and an Iron Bank vault full of crackpot theories. We're doing something a little different today. Instead of talking about the books or the show, we're going to talk about larger issues of representation on screen and behind the camera, how culture figures into our daily lives, and the new show announced by HBO last week, Confederate. I think if you hang out with us, you'll hear some perspectives you should reckon with. This is 2017 America, and this stuff is in the news. This debate, this conversation about Confederate. With me today is April Rain, creator of the Oscars So White hashtag, and now one of the loudest voices behind the No Confederate hashtag that was trending during the Game of Thrones episode this week. You've had a busy week, April Rain. How are you feeling?
I am both tired and energized at the same exact time, so I really appreciate you reaching out and allowing me to have this conversation with you and your listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. You've been, you've been talking a lot this week and really confronting a lot of people's different notions and ideas and complaints about things that don't actually exist, I've noticed. And you have a remarkable patience and good attitude, I feel like. How do you kind of maintain, how do you just keep from blocking and screaming at people on Twitter all the time?
You know, to be honest with you, I have to stay very mild-mannered and even-tempered, because otherwise I get pigeonholed as the angry black woman, right? That little silly stereotype. Uh-huh. So I'm not supposed to be emotional. But in this case, it's really relatively simple, because I'm operating from a position of facts. So this isn't emotional. This isn't about me. It's about the show and what has been proposed. So as long as I can come from a logical basis, there's really no reason that emotion should enter into it on either side, although I understand that there are some very passionate thoughts.
Passionate's a good way to say it. Sometimes hateful, sometimes just plain stupid, but always with plenty of passion. Do you watch Game of Thrones?
I don't. I saw part of one episode. My husband watches. And so, you know, as I was moving through the family room, the one scene I saw was, and I don't even know names, so I'm going to screw this up and your listeners are going to hate me.
Is it
Cersei, the Queen of the Dragon? Is that right?
That's Daenerys, but go ahead. Queen of the Dragons.
Okay. So whomever the Queen of the Dragons lady is, what I saw is that she was sort of body surfing as if she was at Coachella over this group of brown people that she had just freed or something. And I'm sure you know very well. Yep. the scene that I'm talking about. And that was my only introduction. And it was, as you know, Jay-Z says, grand opening, grand closing for me. You know, if that was the extent of interaction that characters of color had on this show, I just knew it wasn't for me. So we are to believe that there are dragons flying around and that people are being resurrected from the dead, from what I understand, but there can't be any characters of color on the show. So that's the alternate history, I think, that Benioff and Weiss are trying to bring into Confederate.
Well, I mean, this has been a conversation in the community, you know, in the fan community, that's never really been totally clear, because they are working based on the books. And in the books, the only people of color in the books are slaves. There's one black guy who's the best pirate in the world. You know, they are, the depictions are everything you think they are, everything you've been told, right? In the books. And so it's never really been totally clear if that is a problem with the creators of the show, or if that is them, you know, being faithful to the books. And
right.
What the author...
And so,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. So I take that point well. But what I also know is that showrunners have poetic license, right?
And they have taken plenty.
Right. And so why not here do the same? You know, and because... unless, and again, I haven't read the books either, so I'm operating from a point of ignorance with respect to Game of Thrones. But unless every single character is described as the raven-haired beauty, or, you know what I mean? Or, yep. Or, you know, then how do you know? You know, was, the gentleman who, no, I'm not going to do that. So, you know, is there a character who is a little person, you know, in yes. the book?
Yes.
There is.
Tyrion.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And so, but does it describe every single character? And so even, let's say even the protagonist, let's say even the main characters have to be white. And I'm not exactly sure why, but let's say that they do. What about the extra? Right? Because, I mean, can't you have people on the battlefield who are, you know, dying? I just saw a thing. I think it was Jon Snow, and I was, you know, just walking through the family room, and he was standing there with his sword out, and there was a whole stampede of like thousands of soldiers coming to kill him, right? Or whatever. None of those people could have been people of color at all, even though they're going to die soon. Like, you know, that's what I'm saying. I understand that the major characters maybe can't be, although I would take issue with that because we have things like Hamilton on Broadway, sure. you know, which work just fine. But it just boggles the mind that nobody could be, you know, in 7 years. You can't find one character in 7 years, even if it's a short-lived character. That can be a person of color. It doesn't have to be a black person. It could be a Native American person, you know, or, you know, sure. a person of Native American descent. I'm not saying there need to be, you know, Indians on Game of Thrones.
Right.
But again, if this is fantasy, then you should be able to take a little bit of license.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. Well, you know, I think there's, I think George Martin actually kind of, because he's, you know, he's given some responses about this, you know, and it's, they're, not really worth repeating, kind of relating to like the history of it. It's they're obvious band-aids, you know, and what they sound more to like to me is, you know, cause George Martin is married to a woman named Paris, who mm-hmm. is a very vocal feminist, and a very intellectual philosophical feminist, you know, really a fascinating person very much. And I wish that she wrote more, you know, of her own stuff, just because it's kind of incredible to listen to her talk. So, but he has talked about the way she's added to his perspective, you know, and he spent a lot of time at like Ren fairs in the 70s and 80s, you know, and it seems to me like he's kind of like, I know a lot of people like this, like old white liberals who theoretically aren't racist, but don't actually ever interact with people of color in their mm-hmm. day-to-day lives. And so it kind of seems like he's just not been kind of forced to grapple with that reality in the way that he has with strong female characters, which the show is teeming with, you know. So I don't know. It's just, it's one of those things that, like, it, you know, it's just never clear. But I think that your point about creative license in the show is a very good one. And they've taken plenty of creative license, including chucking whole characters and you know, taking whole storylines and putting them with different characters and those kinds of things. So it seems like tagging a little melanin onto that wouldn't be so much of a stretch. I don't know.
Right. So they pick and choose when they want to have creative license. And although Mr. Martin may not have had the experiences, you know, a more well-rounded and diverse life experience, clearly Benioff and Weiss have. You know, and that's why they're receiving this sustained criticism over 6 or 7 years. So if somebody says to you in year one or year two, you know, hey, where are the characters of color? You know, what about this gratuitous rape scene? And you ignore it for 5 or 6 years. That's the issue. A little bit of a segue probably earlier than you wanted to, but that's the real issue that we have with Confederate, right? So everybody says, oh, well, you haven't seen it yet, and you're judging it based on one press release, and you don't know what they're going to do, and they're great writers, and they're great showrunners. All of that is true. But what we also know is that they do have a history, right? They mm-hmm. have this history of gratuitous depiction of rape, and refusing to acknowledge the issue with respect to significant characters of color on the show, and with respect to the lack of diversity behind the camera, because it's not just the faces that we see on the screen.
Right.
It's also who is telling the story. Who's the director? Who else is in the writing room? Who are the casting directors? Who are the other producers? Those things matter as well.
And so they can't blame that on George Martin.
No, of course not. Of course right. not. So if you have these criticisms over 5 or 6 years and you do nothing about it, and then you have a press release, and actually the article that came out with the press release, they were specifically asked about this question. So this was their moment to shine, to say, you right. know what? We haven't gotten it right in the past, but we acknowledge that it's an issue, and these are the ways that we're going to make it different and better and confederate. Instead, they punted the question, and they didn't address the issues of race at all. And that's why those of us who are saying no Confederate using the hashtag are concerned. We have no yeah. confidence in them because they had 5 or 6 years to get it right. And when specifically asked about it, they don't want to address it. So obviously, if Confederate is about the enslavement of Black people yet again, then clearly there's going to be the subjugation of women in the show, and clearly there are going to be issues of race in the show. If you had 6, 7 years to deal with these issues and you haven't, why should I have any confidence that you know how to make it work this time?
You also pointed out something in another interview I saw with you that I actually noticed in the article. I thought was really weird when they were asked about bringing on Malcolm and Nichelle, the other showrunners, who are both
who
Black.
Are African American. Yes, right. That makes a difference apparently.
Right. Well, I'm happy to get into that conversation a little later if you'd like. Terrell has a lot of strong points about that on Sunday when he was using the hashtag. My friend Terrell, we'll link him in the show notes as well. Terrell Starr was part of the No Confederate hashtag, and he talked a lot about Nichelle and Malcolm specifically. I thought it was really interesting that when they were asked about having them on the show, the Game of Thrones guys said that it was because they were lazy, right?
Yeah.
And you pointed this out too, which was something that stood out to me. They brought them on because they're lazy. And I thought that was that's a really terrible response, first of all. I mean, that's kind of insulting in a way, you know, to...
No, not in any way. It was insulting. It was because what they were saying is, and I don't have the exact quote, but I'm going to paraphrase it. Once we realized that this was going to be a bigger deal than we initially thought, we brought in the Spellmans because we, Benioff and Weiss, were lazy. So what that says to me is, even though that you know that you have had issues with respect to race in Game of Thrones for years, you didn't bring in the Spellmans to say, you know what, we got it wrong. We want to get it right this time with Confederate. So we're going to bring on people that we know are going to be able to handle these issues with nuance and the sensitivity that they deserve. No. What they said is, we were lazy, so we're going to bring in new writers to do the brunt of the work. And so we can talk about what it means
right.
for two white men, you know, two rich white men to say,
to
well, we want the Black
workers.
People. Right. We want the Black people to do all the work, but we're going to be the showrunners and making the final decisions.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
HBO could not have rolled this out any worse. They truly
yeah.
could not have.
Well, and I think that you know, their response spoke to something interesting to me, which is that I think that there are a lot of white people who are not comfortable just saying, I will never understand race in America from the perspective of African Americans. It doesn't matter what I do, how open I think I am. There's some level of this kind of daily interaction that I have the ability to escape from, and that by its very nature alters my perspective in a way that, like, I will never fully be able to grasp it. And so if I am going to approach these subjects, I need to have people around me who are working on this on an equal basis who can grasp it, right? And I think that a lot of even well-intentioned or whatever you want to call them, white people are uncomfortable saying that out loud. And I don't understand why. It's weird. You know, I will never really understand what it's like to be a woman in this world, regardless of how much I might think about it and talk about it. And, you know, I'm married to a woman who's happy to, right? Like, but I will never really fully grasp it. I don't understand why that's such a hard thing to state. But they just like just kind of like smiled and shut up and said something dumb, as opposed to being able to like take this head on, which would be, I think, I don't know, would that make you more comfortable? You know, is there a response that they could give that would make you more comfortable?
I don't think so at this point, because I think they screwed it. I think, you know, they screwed the pooch, as they say, too badly with respect to this. But if we had more people, just more American people to say, or American white folks to say what you just said, race relations in this country would move exponentially in a better direction. And I think that the reason why we don't hear people saying that is because, number one, they don't want to admit that they don't know something or that they're ignorant about something. And, you know, and everybody is like that. You don't want to admit, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And the second thing is to admit that they don't understand the perspective of someone else is to also admit that those people, those other people, have different perspectives, right?
That so are equally valid.
Well, not just that, but if you say, Mike, if you say to me, you know what, you're a black woman, I'm a white man, I can never understand fully what you go through as a black person, right? Mm-hmm. That's you admitting that there is a difference between your world and my world, right? And those same people don't want to admit that. Oh, what do you mean? Why can't you just pull yourself up by your bootstraps? You know, I have the same advantages that you have. Why, you know, why aren't you driving a BMW? You know, whatever. So if you say, I can never fathom what you went through, that admits that I went through something different and therefore worse than you. Right? Because nobody ever says, I can never imagine what a rich person goes through, right? We all want to get there.
I imagine
right?
that shit all the time.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, because that is aspirational. But nobody wants to admit that somebody else has a worse way to go.
But it's a mind-blowing, you know, I remember a time in my life when I genuinely believed that I had faced adversity, right? Like, unusual or not unusual necessarily, but
and so, perhaps you did. Now, so let me be clear.
Okay. You know, perhaps not that white people don't, right? But I think that when we talk about it doesn't, you know, it doesn't, people don't really grasp the kind of different layers of it or levels of it. And it takes, I don't know. Sorry, what were you going to say?
I mean, I don't want to get into the oppression Olympics here, right?
Of
and who has it worse. And I also don't want to say that your experience as a white man isn't valid. Like, I don't know anything about your background, but if you grew up dirt poor, absolutely you experience adversity, right? But there are distinctions. You know, I have a 17-year-old son, a black son, obviously, because I'm a black woman. So we have to have the conversation with him, you know, at least monthly about what he needs to do when he gets pulled over. And we need to, you know, and we do monthly checks on his car to make sure that all the taillights are working and, you know, and that he knows exactly where his registration and his insurance are, and, you know, and he knows to keep his hands either tended to or to put his hands outside the window when he does get pulled over. That's a conversation that a lot of white parents, maybe all white parents, don't have to have. And I have to have it on a regular basis. So that's just a different experience for me. Am I claiming that I'm a victim? Absolutely not. I would never want to be anything other than what I am. All I'm saying is, you know, appreciate that we do have life experiences that are different and respect those distinctions, as opposed to sweeping them under the rug as if, you know, I'm just complaining because, you know, you're in the greatest country in the world. So what's the problem? You know, you could go back to Africa. I mean, I still hear that in 2017. You know, I've never been to Africa. You know what I mean? So how am I going to go back? You know, I was born here, my parents, my grandparents, and so on up the line for, you know, a few generations at least. So, you know, that's just a silly response.
So, well, and this is, God, there's so much to go. There's so much to talk. It's James Baldwin's birthday, and I could just sit here and talk about this guy and the profound effect he's had on my adulthood all afternoon. But we got to talk about this show a little bit too. I mean, I think that you know what you're talking about, that unique perspective that presumably Nichelle and Malcolm could bring some at least familiarity with to the table.
That's what they say. That's what they say. But let's talk a little bit, you know, and they say that they have a pedigree or whatever, and they are upset with Black people because we, I don't know, haven't shown them what they feel is the right amount of deference. And my response to that is, there's an old saying that says all skin folk ain't kin folk, right? So even if you look the way I look, that doesn't necessarily mean that you and I share the same life experiences, because all Black people are not a monolith, right? So for example, Dr. Ben Carson, you know, he's a Black man and he's from the same area in which I now live. So we have that in common, but our politics are so different that there's a great chance that, that I would absolutely rather have a conversation with you, Mike, a white man, than I would with Ben Carson, a Black man, right? Because it's not like we all go to the same Black people meetings or something like that. So, you know, so then we have to look at the
bottom. That needs to be said.
No.
I'm sorry to laugh, like, because that, it's just, it's an uncomfortability, I guess. I don't know why. That needs to be said out loud. Black people are not a monolith. Everybody doesn't get the same talking points every Monday morning. I don't mean to laugh at that. I apologize. Go ahead.
No. There's I know you get it. So, you know, so I took no offense at all. I wasn't even thinking about it. So, you know, but there's a thing where, you know, why can't Black people get over it? Well, clearly some Black people have, and that speaks to the monolith thing again, right? Ben Carson has gotten over it. General Colin Powell has gotten over it. Condoleezza Rice has gotten over it. I have not. But that just, you know, but white people are never asked to do something en masse, you know, all 100% of you, whatever that means, which is kind of silly. So when we have these conversations, you know, about Michelle and Malcolm Spellman, one thing that we need to look at is, you know, their body of work. So Malcolm writes for, currently, I believe, Empire, you know, which is basically a nighttime soap opera. You know, it's Dynasty or Knott's Landing for the millennial generation, right?
Yep.
And Michelle Spellman wrote for The Good Wife, and that's really how they're most well known with respect to their writing. And so what about either of those two shows tells me that they have the nuance and the complexity and the sensitivity to deal with issues of the enslavement of millions of Black people, the punishment of Black people, the subjugation, the commodification of Black pain, because we don't see that in either of those shows. You know, so if you want to talk about pedigree, you know, what have you done before then? Why is, you know, because why should we trust you implicitly? Because you're Black? No. Like, you know, if someone else had said that, that would have been, oh, well, you're being racist, you know, so I'm not going to trust you simply because your skin tone is the same as mine with something as sensitive as this. Right.
So
because go ahead.
No. I mean, I'm curious. I want to talk a little bit about why that matters. You know, like it's, I mean, this idea that like, oh, it's just a TV show, you know, like, what do you care? Whatever, that kind of just let it be, you know, or some, this sort of diminishing really of the place of culture in our society and in our walking around daily lives. Right. Because we're ultimately not talking about blog posts here. We're talking about people and how they feel when they wake up in the morning. And I think it's important to remember that, you know, and how culture plays into that, both into supporting me and into, you know, not always supporting others, right? And so how does violence against Black bodies, something that we see, there's a lot of conversation around that and how that is a very common part of American, you know, entertainment, right? Which sounds like it should have like a little song behind it, like a little ditty or whatever, right? The kind of the white savior trope, right? Which was something that was talked about, that scene in Game of Thrones where the Dragon Mother is crowd surfing at Coachella. That was one of the complaints about that scene specifically. All the slaves were people of color, and they were saved by the white lady, and that was a very distinct image. There was no gray area in that image, you know. So over time, because, you know, okay, so one episode is just a TV show or whatever, but these things all contribute to our culture. So I'm interested in how you feel those things contribute to, you know, police brutality or to, you know, there's all these other different kind of issues that are much more tangible, I guess, than television.
Right. So let me give you an analogy. Back in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, everybody smoked on camera. Right. In the movies, I mean, that was the sexy thing, right? So, you know, some, you know, a lady holds out her cigarette and a man lights it, you know, and she's got the fire red lipstick and, you know, and that's sexy. And then there was a significant campaign to remove smoking in movies. Why? Because kids were watching it and they thought that that was cool and sexy and the thing to do. And there was an increase in smoking in this country. Right. So you can't say it's just a film. It's just a TV show. It is part of our culture. People get their information from TV, whether it's fantasy or reality or the news. And, you know, and people form their judgments and opinions about other people based on TV as well. So we can talk about smoking back then, and we can talk about race now. I mean, you know, all you have to do, Benioff and Weiss said that the subjugation of black people in this show, this alt history show, that it would be alternate history in Confederate. And yet, just turn on the damn TV, right? We are living. Some of these things are happening right now. You know, if you have Dylann Roof, who is a self-described white nationalist who waved the Confederate flag, walked into a church, a place where people were praying and praising God, and killed 9 black people in Charleston, South Carolina. That was in the last 5 years. That's not something from the 60s or from Jim Crow. We've got textbooks in the state of Texas. Literally, they are rewriting history to say that black people in the 1700s and 1800s were not slaves. They were just servants, as if they could go home to their own houses and then come back because the wages were great, right? So, and we had just today a woman in South Carolina. She holds some office. I'm not sure if she was, she may have been the governor, maybe Nikki Haley. I can't remember. But she said that she was in.
Yeah, go ahead.
Who was that?
She's like a state something, but she's a politician there, an elected representative who has won votes.
Right. And so she said that she was very proud of the Confederate history in the South, and she didn't care who knows it, and that the Confederate leaders are, you know, should be praised. That's 2017. So where does the alternate, where does the alt history come in a show like Confederate, when this is our reality every single day? You know, we have people who are being killed by law enforcement officers and state-sanctioned violence, you know, and we can go through the hashtags of names, you know, Sandra Bland and Rekia Boyd and Alton Sterling and Philando Castile. Now, we can debate until the end of time whether they were doing something illegal or they weren't doing something illegal, or, you know, maybe they were just standing there, whatever the case may be. In every single instance, nothing that they did was worth their life. It was not a capital offense. You know what I'm saying? So let's say so-and-so had a gun in the car, or so-and-so was running away from the cops. Okay, even if that were true, that doesn't mean that they should lose their life because they are running away. They should
Nobody
not lose their life.
Nobody executes a 12-year-old boy for playing on a playground, regardless of what toy he's got.
That exactly right. Right. So and so that's what the importance is with respect to the images that we see on screen, because they normalize behavior. You know, there's a reason why, you know, you don't see on regular broadcast TV, you don't see people shooting up with heroin or meth. You know, you may see that on a movie or something on Netflix where you actually have to pay money to subscribe, you know, so you are voluntarily, you know, and that's why you have parental controls on Netflix, so that if you don't want your kids right. seeing other folks, you know, shooting up with meth, then you can keep that from, you know, keep them from seeing that, hopefully. But because people understand, and when I say people, I mean network executives understand the power that television has and that those images on screen make a difference. So if you're going to normalize violence, if every single week people are going to be able to watch Black people be punished and just be slaves, be subjugated to someone else, then that's going to put something in their mind. They may not ever act on it, but it may make them feel like it's a little more normal. And here, and one more point on this. This is, according to Benioff and Weiss, this is the third civil war. Now, I don't know what year that makes it, right? Because we've only gone through one, really, so far. So is it 100 years in the future? I don't know. But what you're telling me is that we have had three civil wars, and the Black and brown people in this country, in all of that time, aren't smart enough to figure out what the hell that they need to do so that they don't get enslaved again, right? Because yeah. because by definition, that makes us inferior. Like, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me right. twice or three times, Jesus Christ. You know, right, I mean, you know, right. are we all mentally unwell that we can't figure out how to get together maybe with the Latinx community or with the Native American community, and we can pool our resources and have a positive insurrection or something like that. But no, every single time Black people are dumb enough that they're going to be enslaved again. What the hell is that in 2017 or whatever year in which Confederate is supposed to be based?
Yeah. Well, it's a goddamn embarrassment is what it is. What I mean, one thing that I think that, so like, they make fantasy, right? So what if, let's just say, what if the institution of slavery in their show has progressed beyond race, and there's a racism, I guess, and there's no obviously historical, I mean, they've been able to maintain racism without slavery just fine.
But that's
right?
that's not the story they're telling, though. Are you saying a different story, or are you saying, based on what Confederate is?
I'm saying, what if in Confederate they have okay. Black slavers and white slaves, in addition to white slavers and Black slaves, right? And
that's not what they're doing. I mean, if you're making up something completely new, then I will rock with you on that. If what you're saying is that the press release that was issued, it wasn't.
It did not indicate that. No.
Yeah. Okay.
It did not indicate
either way.
That. I'm wondering if, I mean, is that like, you know, does that in any way mitigate the conversation? You know, what I'm saying is I think that the show that the press release didn't really indicate any specific elements of fantasy outside of the idea of the Third World War, right? And so I wonder, like, is there some value? I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, like, if you are able to in some fantastic way remove race from the conversation, is there a value to exploring the institution of slavery outside of its really specific historical context?
Not
or is
to
that
me.
Is that a denigration of the historical context and the fact that we're still living with it?
Right. I think it's the latter. We still have not grappled with the vestiges of slavery and Jim Crow in this country to this day. So if what you're saying is that there are Black slaveholders and white people who are enslaved, see, we've done that already. Okay, because when Black people were freed in the 1860s, and I don't say specifically 1865 because it all didn't happen on the same day.
Juneteenth.
There were right, and even thereafter, I was reading that some of the states didn't ratify the 13th Amendment until like the 1913s, the 1915s, right? So, which is amazing to me, including states in the North, like Delaware. I think it was 1913, which is unbelievable. But anyway, that's a different story. So, if what you so when Black people were freed in the 1860s, some of them were able to be very successful in their farming, and were able to hire indentured servants who were white. So you know, they weren't slaves, but they worked for Black people, and they couldn't stop working until they had paid off their debt or whatever the case may be. But even then, there was a hierarchy involved, right? Based on race, which is a social construct. And so that's the distinction there. So even if you have white slave owners and Black slaves, Black enslaved people, and Black slaveholders and white enslaved people, if the majority is white people owning Black people, guess where the white enslaved people are going to rank on the hierarchy? They are going to rank, you see what I'm saying? They're going to rank even higher than the Black slaveholders based on race, not based on socioeconomic status or, you know, whether you own other people, which is disgusting in and of itself. So when there is an insurrection, which of course there has to be on this show because that's where you're going to get the drama, guess who the white enslaved people are going to side with? Right. And then guess who is going to get leniency from the majority white slaveholders? The white enslaved people. So you're going to be back to the same place. And so then the white enslaved people, newly freed after this insurrection or whatever, are now going to attempt to subjugate perhaps even the Black slaveholders to get back at them for revenge for previously enslaving them. So eventually it is going to become a Black versus white thing because of race.
Eventually, there's really no way to separate it from the context, and it's really not particularly valuable to even try to do that.
Yeah, no, that's one of the arguments. It's one of the arguments that I see online, you know, oh, well, you know, we have this show and it'll explain to people, you know, how bad slavery was. And some people need this education. It's like, well, my God, we have Django, 12 Years a Slave, Birth of a Nation, Roots, you know, both the original 1970 version and the more current one. Yeah. And we have Underground. So how much more explanation do you need when I can name half a dozen different shows or movies that deal specifically with how bad, you know, Glory with Denzel Washington, that deals with how bad slavery was? Like, why do you still need to know? It's the same thing with respect to I wrote a piece for the Washington Post a while ago about why I won't share graphic videos of Black people getting killed by police officers anymore, because it becomes sort of this death porn kind of thing. You're enjoying our pain. You can't tell me that it's anything else. And it also is a question of credibility. If I tell you that a dozen people, and of course there's actually hundreds, but I can name a dozen people off the top of my head who have died at the hands of police, and you say, oh, well, we don't know what happened before the camera was turned on, or I need to see all sides of it before I can make up my mind. What you're doing is calling me a liar. Right. Because you don't believe me. If it was one incident, of course that would be one too many, but I get you on that. But if I tell you that there have been dozens of people who have been unarmed and killed by police and you still don't believe me, then you and I have a credibility issue, because now you're calling me a liar for no particular reason. And it's the same thing with these slave, you know, narratives. You know, why in the world, if slavery was, you know, kind of cool and it worked for everybody and nobody was really too upset about it, we'd still have it. Right? We had to literally pass an amendment to get rid of it because it was so bad and the states wouldn't do it on their own. So why is it that you can't believe that it was so bad?
I don't think there's any reason to believe that the vast majority of modern corporations wouldn't use slaves if they could, because it's a profit motive. And I think you can see that when you see them using incarcerated people who are used all over this country for all kinds of employment, you know, who are used to do work. And they, you know, I mean, it looks terrible to be in prison. Having a job, I'm sure, is a great way to kind of break the monotony and so on and so forth. But when you're being paid $1 a day, I don't know what else you call that. You know, I'm not sure. Like, I don't know, you know, it's not slavery because it's $1 a day, because it's some pittance that you can't eat off of. You know, I mean, I don't, I'm not really sure what else you call that, you know. So right. I think that there's every reason to believe that it would be ongoing still if, you know, there was, if it wasn't kind of socially so unacceptable, considered so unacceptable.
I would recommend to your listeners two things. Number one, the book, The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander, which really discusses, you know, the history of the enslavement of Black people and how that history still reverberates today through the disparities that we see in education and housing and employment and also in mass incarceration. And then the second thing would be the movie 13th by Ava DuVernay. It's a documentary. And if you really don't believe it, things were that bad, or if you're really interested in learning more about slavery or being educated, start there. If you can watch 13th and read The New Jim Crow and tell me that you still want to see something like Confederate done, you know, then I am happy to have that conversation with you. But, you know, we need to, I can't imagine anybody that
you're dedicated.
Right. You're dedicated in your intolerance, but that's fine. You know, and but at least then we're operating from a place of information.
Right. I think everybody should, every single person alive, at least in America, should watch The 13th, because if you, you know, if your worldview can't grapple with one documentary, then it's pretty fragile to begin with. Right. And I mean, that movie presents a really exceptional and very concise, you know, I mean, if you've studied this stuff, you know, there's a lot more to it. But she knows that, too. Obviously, she said that when it was coming out. I look at this movie as a primer for people who, you know, need to educate themselves, right? And I think the point you're making about if you don't know at this point what Jim Crow was and how it affected people, you have kind of tried to not know that, because that information is available to you. You know, you kind of have to at this point, I think, go out of your way to avoid that a little bit. And it's unfortunate, but I think a lot of people do that. You mentioned, you mentioned underground before. There has been a lot of calls from the No Confederate base for HBO to pick up Underground. Tell me, I'm familiar with Underground. I'm interested, you know, for you to tell me kind of what's different about it, about that show, as opposed to what we can imagine in Confederate or even existing things.
Right. So, you know, Underground is a show that was on WGN, and it's about, you know, slavery. And, you know, during the time of Harriet Tubman, she's one of the central characters. So it's not a walk in the park either. But what we know is that, you know, we've already had a couple of seasons, and so we've seen how they've dealt with these issues of the subjugation of people. Are there depictions of sexual assault against Black women? Yes, there are. Are there people who, you know, who have been broken and bloodied and killed, you know, because they are enslaved? Yes, there are. But it is handled with nuance and care. And that's not something that we know is going to happen from Benioff and Weiss. So it's a proven show. It has a dedicated and loyal fan base. The showrunner is a Black woman, Misha Green, who is also executive producer, co-executive producer, and she's done a great job with the show. You know, it's top-notch acting, and it is a story of resilience, you know, as the enslaved folks try to get free, you know, and there's a lot of nuance, but it's a show that's done well, and so that's why we're saying with No Confederate, if you just must do another slavery show, do something that you know has top-notch writing, has a fantastic showrunner, already has a loyal fan base, so you don't have to worry about, you know, building up viewers again, and it's just a show done well. The hypocrisy is, you hear people, you know, people say, oh, you know, you Black people are always complaining about slavery and you just need to get over it. And that was, you know, 100 years ago and things are so much better for you now. But these are the same people who want to see Confederate, right? So if we're supposed to get over
it.
They
want to keep the statues.
Exactly. So if we're supposed to get over it, then why don't you leave all of that stuff in the past? Why are you asking for more slavery shows if, you know, we want to push this into the back of our minds? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Well, I think there's actually a really clear line that can be drawn very directly between, in comparison between Game of Thrones and Underground, which is, in Game of Thrones, there's one female character who's not white, His name is Missandei, and she's one of the main advisors to Daenerys, who's the Queen of Dragons. But she is, and she's presented as being exceptionally intelligent. You know, she speaks some undefined number of languages, right? But within that, you know, she was raised as a slave, and she was freed by Daenerys, and her training is extremely servile. Her personality is extremely servile. Like, not just I will pour your wine, right? But like extremely, like don't speak unless spoken to, you know, this level of servant. And because she speaks so many languages, she's always at Daenerys' side. So she gets a lot of screen time, right? As far as that goes. But because she's a translator, very few of the things she says originate with her. They're not her thoughts. She's speaking, but she's speaking someone else's mind, you know. And there was a big scene a couple episodes ago where she and one of the other black characters named Grey Worm, who's the head of the army of black people who've had their genitals cut off. So, like, there's that for you, too, right? There's just one more thing. All of these, you know, all of these people, all of this representation, and all of them are dead silent and don't have dicks. It's a very creepy kind of thing, you know, kind of way, decision around representation. And so she has a relationship with the lead of them, and they have their first sexual experience. And leading up to that is what is meant to be a very emotional scene between them, but both their emotions but mainly their willingness and therefore ability to speak their emotions has been stunted their entire life. And so you see them in this scene together, very stunted and trying to come out, but even with each other, they can't. Even with no one else in the room, no masters, no whatever in the room, they still are limited in their ability to speak their own emotions. And when you see women or any, you know, characters in Underground, they have all of the nuance that you want human beings to have, that a genuine representation of a character has. They have many levels. They are good and bad, sometimes on the same day, you know, and you see them expressing their emotions and able to deal with their situation from a place of humanity that the characters in Game of Thrones, you know, have never been allowed.
Right, because they're fully developed characters in Underground, because they're actual people, which, you know, sounds so very simplistic, but they are seen as actual human beings as opposed to property, right? Yeah. Because if you're property or animals, because we castrate animals, and we want animals, you know, you speak when you're spoken to or whatever, but if you speak out of turn, you get a swat on the nose, you know, if you're talking about a dog, right? You're barking too loud, right? Then you have to get put in a cage. I mean, the parallels there are striking. So that's what the distinction is, I think.
All right, I want to ask you two more questions, and then you've been very generous. This has been a really great conversation. I really appreciate you coming and expressing all of this stuff, and I think people need to hear it and need to grapple with it and need to have your voice in their ear when they're thinking about Confederate, because it might be simple for some people, you know, to just kind of see this and like, oh, it's another show and move on. But even if they are going to approach it that way, I think they need to, you know, it's valuable to understand that not everything is that simple for everyone, right?
Right. And when people say, you know, let's just wait and see. Which is, let's finish that sentence. Wait and see is, let's wait and see how bad it is, right? It's not wait and see how good it is. And maybe, you know, it'll win all the Emmys. It's let's wait and see how horrible it is. And then if we don't like it and, it, you know, if it turns our stomach, then we'll say, you know, maybe, oh, yeah, OK, you know, the black people were right. You know, this shouldn't be right. on after all. But by then it's too late because you've already inflicted trauma on thousands, maybe millions of people. OK,
and they've invested a lot of money. And when
Which changes the
calculation for them.
Right, because once the premiere airs, you know that they, you know, it's not like they're shooting these one a week. So once you get episode one, that means there's going to be at least four or five episodes in the can, and those are going to play because otherwise you lose money. So that means you've got at least a month of subjugation of black people, you know, and it's not as easy as, oh, well, you just don't have to watch if you don't like it, because again, whomever is watching is having that type of violence normalized for them. And then it would be even harder to get the show off the air once it starts running. That's why we're doing this now and not waiting for a year and a half.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. And real quick, I know Amazon announced a show that had actually been in development for a while now. They didn't sign the contract the next day, right? But Amazon has announced a show that's being made by Will Packer, who was a producer of Girls Trip, which I have not seen, and Straight Outta Compton, and The New Route, both of which I have seen. Between him and Aaron Magruder, who's the creator of Boondocks, which, like, I mean, you know, I like, you know, Archer and I, you know, I like a lot of different of the modern animations, but Boondocks is one of the best shows. I mean, that's one of the best American. I don't know. I love it. I just think it's incredible. So I'm always excited for Magruder's thing. And their show that they're doing for Amazon depicts post-reparations America, right? Where former slaves were given three states, as I understand, to basically rule on their own. And so we're now at a point where America is actually starting to kind of crash and burn, while this, you know, this state made of former slaves is actually ascendant. So what do we know about that show? And, you know, what are your thoughts about that? Are you excited for the new Amazon show? And what do you think about the timing of announcing it?
Right. I am incredibly excited about what is tentatively being entitled Black America, Will Packer's new series on Amazon. Because, you know, again, we, you know, past is prologue. So we look at the how he has handled issues of race in the past. And I think he's done a great job, you know, not 100%, but, you know, definitely, you know, has those issues at the forefront of his mind. What I also know is that we don't have enough shows on television and enough movies that show people of color thriving, you know, and that's what this show is going to be about. So unlike Confederate, in which black people are in which we have a group of people who are enslaved and ruled by another group of people, that's not the case in Black America. It's just about black folks living their best lives. And why would you object to something like that? It's not black people enslaving white people. It is just black people, you know, in an alternate, this is actually an alternate reality, right? You know, in which they have this self-determination. What I know is it has been in development for quite some time. I believe that Amazon just put out the press release because there was a lot of discussion about alternate history. And it's one of the questions as we had No Confederate trending on Sunday night, you know, I said to folks, because we were saying, even if you're going to live tweet Game of Thrones, that's fine with us. Just use No Confederate, you know, oh my God, there's Cersei again, hashtag no Confederate, right? Mm-hmm. So we weren't saying boycott at all. But I wasn't watching because I don't watch the show. So I was asking people, well, what kind of alternate history would you like to see? And there were so many fantastic ideas. Like, what if the Haitian Revolution had gone differently? You know, what if Native American and Black folks had gotten together and, you know, and created their own reality? So I think Amazon saw that and said, hey, you know, we told you that there was going to be a show, you know, about something or other. So let us be more specific and let you know what's coming down the pike. And that, you know, we are thinking about alternate histories, that this show will be from a much more positive point of view. And, you know, maybe Amazon was thinking, you know, we don't want some other network to jump on, you know, to jump on their idea. So let us let you know, what we already have planned. So I think that the timing could not have been better for us in the No Confederate campaign. You know, but even if this had been more fully announced, you know, a year from now or a year ago, I would be incredibly happy about it.
Sure. All right, one last question. I'm going to let you go. If you grew up in a world with full equality and we didn't have to talk about any of this stuff, what would you be doing? Like, or do you like grow the most amazing peonias, or like what do you know, what are you interested in that's not all of this? Do you have time in your life for things that aren't saving the world or?
Hey. You know, I would be sleeping, probably. I would be taking the most luscious nap. I don't know because I, you know, I do this work because I love it. You know, I love fighting for more representation for marginalized communities. And it's not just the black, white binary thing. I'm talking about LGBTQ community. I'm talking about the disabled community or people living with disabilities. I'm talking about folks with First Nation status, you know, different sexual orientations, different gender. Everybody should have an opportunity to tell their own stories. So, you know, I would probably be doing the same kind of stuff that I am doing. It just wouldn't be as hard.
That's a great answer. April Rain, I really appreciate it. How can people find you to be able to follow you and continue to be inspired by your work?
Yikes. Okay, so I have a website, which is I am Rain of April, R-E-I-G-N of O-F, and then April like the month all across all platforms. So my website is rainofapril.com, and then Twitter is my primary community, Rain of April, but I'm also on Facebook and Instagram, where you can also find me at Rain of April.
All that good stuff. Excellent. I really appreciate your work. I appreciate you taking time to sit down with us today and talk about all of this stuff, and I will be obviously following all of your efforts around Confederate. I'm really excited to see how this works. I think it's pretty undisputable that your Oscar So White campaign, I keep giving you credit for that. I'm missing it. You keep, you know, you've got a number of people you keep linking in the No Confederate hashtag. But I think there's no question that the Oscar So White campaign had an effect. I mean, it's been a conversation. I make movies. I know a lot of people in the movie world and a lot of writers in the movie world. And, you know, all of them were talking about it, whether or not they were talking about you. So, you know, I'll be interested to see if the same effect happens with Confederate. I think so far, I mean, they're obviously listening. Whether or not they're responding, they're clearly hearing you.
Right. So I think the fact that we got a response from HBO Sunday night, you know, that someone else in the industry said on Twitter, you know, they can't, you know, somebody said, oh, well, nobody's going to care about this tomorrow. It's like, you know what? You get a network like HBO to submit a statement specifically about this campaign, the campaign that had already only been running for 3 days, they care and they're concerned, right? So, right. And that was the whole point of the hashtag campaign this past Sunday, which we'll be doing again this Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern time during Game of Thrones. You know, we're not saying boycott. Absolutely. You know, if that's your show, watch your show. Just use the hashtag No Confederate, because we just want to send HBO a message about the power of social media and the power that we have. Oscar So White is mine. That's something that I created on my own. But No Confederate is a collaborative effort with four other women. So if you'll allow me, I just want to shout them
Absolutely.
Out. Chanel Little, Rebecca Theodore, Jamie Broadnax, who is the founder of Black Girl Nerds, and Lauren Warren. The five of us came together, assembled like Voltron, I like to say, and are doing this campaign together.
Excellent. And if you're not familiar with Black Girl Nerds, you really need to go learn about that, because Black Girl Nerds is pretty great. So, excellent. Thank you very much, April Rain. I really appreciate your time. I have said that before, and I'm probably going to say it like 8 more times before we actually hang up from this Skype call. This has been Podcast Winterfell. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/DVR or at podcastwinterfell.com. We are a part of the DVR Podcasting Network. And if you've listened this far, you already know what's coming next. Axel telling you how to reach out to us. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Podcast Winterfell. You can find the podcast at dvrpodcast.com. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/DVR. You can email the podcast, podcastwinterfell@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Twitter @WinterfellPod and on Facebook, Podcast Winterfell.